hearing of the House Special Committee on Fisheries to order. The time is 10:05 a.m. and today is Thursday, April 1st. No joke. Ha ha. Members present at this time, Representative McCabe, Representative Vance, Representative Story, Representative Christ Tompkins, and myself, Representative Tarr. Please let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. Speaker Suits and Representative Ortiz have been previously excused from today's meeting. We do ask that you silence your cell phones as we get started. Members, please, if you need to pass a note, Thatcher, our committee aide, is in the back. Big thank you to Shannon McCain, our committee secretary, and Alex Banizak from the Juno LAO for their support. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And again, we're still doing the recording remotely, so for the recording secretary, if you would please identify yourself for the record before you speak. Just some housekeeping items. We only have one item on the agenda today because House Bill 107 had been pulled, and then House Bill 54, the invasive species management that we've been working on as a committee bill. We've been trying to address the funding issue, and so want to come around and talk to members about how to hopefully resolve that and bring that back before the committee early next week. But just make sure, since we're trying to work on that together as a committee bill, that we all have time to get comfortable and hope that we've resolved those issues. So we will have that on Tuesday. And then, again, at the request of Representative Gillum, House Bill 107 was pulled, and we don't have that scheduled just yet. We're waiting to hear back from him when he is ready. So that leaves us with just one bill for today, House Bill 64, Fishery Development Association and Assessments. This is our first hearing on House Bill 64. This is a bill of Speaker Stutz, and in her absence, I think her staff, Ms. Sarah Perman, is going to give the introduction and sectional analysis. And then after Ms. Perman does that introduction and sectional analysis, then we will go to committee questions. And we do have some resources online to take any questions. We have legislative legal, and then we have the deputy director from the tax division at Department of Revenue. So those folks, please just know when we get to that point, are going to be available for questions. So if you would please join us, Ms. Perman. Oh, and pardon me, Representative Kronk, thank you for joining us. Wonder. Recognize you.
Good morning, and thank you to the chair. Thank you, and to the members of the committee. Thanks for having me today. My name is Sarah Perman, and I'm a legislative aide for Speaker Stutz, who represents House District 32, which is Kodiak, Cordova, Yakutat, through to Soldovia, Port Graham, etc. before you today is House Bill 64. This bill establishes regional fishery development associations and allows for the associated developing fishery management assessments in order to support the growth of new and developing fisheries. Really briefly, I want to give you the definition of new and developing fisheries because they come up in this bill a fair amount. The definition of new fishery is a prospective fishery within a geographical region that is not currently regulated by the Commercial Fisheries Entries Commission, CFEC. And the developing fishery is a fishery within a geographic region where either the optimum yield has not been reached, the sustained yield has not yet been estimated, a commercial harvest has only recently developed, or stock assessments are not conducted. Years of declining state revenue and reduced state budgets have lessened the department's of Fish and Game's ability to manage established fisheries, and even less so new or developing fisheries. In order to adequately manage our fisheries, the department usually has to do surveys and assessments of the fishery resources. This is so they can identify the biomass, the sustainable yield, et cetera. And in the case of these new and developing fisheries, the funding just isn't there to do these assessments and studies. This bill was brought to us, the idea for this bill was brought to us by a constituent in Prince William Sound who has been working with the Tanner crab industry, Tanner crab in Prince William Sound. This has been a resource which used to be fished 30 plus years ago, and that fishery closed, and they know the biomass is still there. It comes up as a bycatch at times, and for years have pushed to get a fisheries back there. However, the funding hasn't been there from the department to research the biomass. And so for the first time right now, they have what's called a commissioner's permit, which is a limited, non-permanent, essentially trial fishery isn't the right word, but it's a developing fishery. And while they can fish in those in the, that area, they can't do. They still don't have the resources to figure out the biomass, et cetera. Department of Fish and Game still can't conduct a lot of these surveys to make it an established long-term permanent fishery. So working with our constituent, we came up with the idea, and the Department of Fish and Game, we came up with the idea for this bill. House Bill 64 essentially creates a mechanism to fund the management of developing and new fisheries. The bill essentially allows for us to create regional fishery development associations, which are nonprofit organizations that represent the fishery stakeholders. These development associations are able to, they may elect to levy an assessment on themselves, which would then fund the Department of Fish and Game's studies and assessments. These taxes are called management assessments, and they are collected on the fishery resource itself at the time of sale. The buyer will collect it and remit that tax essentially quarterly to the Department of Revenue. And the fund sits there in the state treasury, and then those funds are appropriated back to the associations, who then work in tandem with Fish and Game to create an annual operating plan, which consists of, you know, hey, we need this survey to determine, to do a stock assessment, and it's going to cost Fish and Game, say, $50,000. We'll pay you a check for $50,000 to do that. I'll note that this isn't the first time that the state has seen this. There's actually currently dive fishery associations in statute. SARDFA, the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fish Association, has been using this model since 1998 to manage its gooey duck fisheries, sea urchin fisheries, and sea cucumber fisheries. And this bill was developed using those statutes under Alaska Statutes 43.76-150-210. In summary, House Bill 64 gives new and developing fisheries the mechanisms with which they may fund themselves and support their own annual operations in order to become established fisheries. The bottom line is we know we have these fishery resources, and each of these fisheries is potential revenue for the state. As we continue to see reduced returns in other industries, it makes sense to develop and expand these fisheries, which are revenue and job increasing. If it's the chair's wish, I will briefly walk the committee members through the sections of this bill as well.
Okay, please go ahead.
Thank you. Section one, the Commissioner of Fish and Game will encourage the development of regional fishery development associations. These associations have to be nonprofit organizations. They have to represent the commercial fishermen who would harvest the fishery resources in that fishery. And they're required to have a board of directors that is representative of not only the fishermen, but also the processors and the municipality in which the landings for these fisheries occur. The section also gives the definitions of new fishery and developing fishery that I provided at the top of this overview. Section two adds developing fishery management assessment receipts to the program receipts received by the state. Notably, these assessments don't go into the general fund. Section 3 adds a few new subsections to the fishery tax and assessments statutes. The first one, Section 43.76.281, allows for management assessments to be levied. Under this section, the tax rate can be anywhere from 2.5% to 30%, but that is determined by the association themselves in an election. Section 43.76.283 establishes the criteria of that election. To either approve, amend, or terminate these assessments or taxes. The election can only be held if the commissioner approves of it, and that's the commissioner has to approve of the notice of the election, the ballot, and the voting procedures. Proper notice includes 30 days notice before the ballots go out, and two ballots have to be sent out. And then after the election is done, the ballots have to be counted by an auditor and approved by the commissioner. In order to amend or terminate a pre-established, pre-existing assessment, the Developing Fishery Association has to submit a petition to the Commissioner of Fish and Game with at least 75% of the Board of Directors signing on, in addition to having an election held where a majority of voters approve this amendment and or termination. Sorry, not and or termination. Section 43.76.289 establishes the methodology for collecting the assessment. Like I said before, the buyer is the one who collects the management assessment at time of sale, and they remit that to the Department of Revenue quarterly. If, for example, there's a direct market direct-to-market fisheries business. That business is responsible for paying the assessment directly. And all of those funds are deposited in the state treasury, and appropriations will not be from the UGF, from the Unrestricted General Fund. Section 43.76.291 establishes the methodology for funding the associations themselves. The legislature may be the ones to make, or are the ones to make the appropriations. They may make the appropriations from the fund, from the managed assessments. And the appropriate funds are to be spent in accordance with an operations plan that the association creates in conjunction with the Department of Fish and Game and at times Department of Department of Environmental Conservation. That annual operating plan must specify the activities that will be conducted by the association for the year, and at the end of the year, the association is required to submit an annual financial report back to Fish and Game. And the last section, section 43.79.299, just establishes definitions. And that wraps up my bill sectional, and with that, Madam Chair, I will conclude my introduction of House Bill 64. I am happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Okay, thank you so much, Ms. Perman. Really appreciate the introduction. I do see two questions right now from Representative McCabe and then Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. And through the chair, don't we already have these in the private sector? Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, Prince William Sound Regional Aquaculture Association, Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association. So is this a different thing, or are we just trying to put the aquaculture associations under statute, and how will it affect those associations and the hatcheries that they already run?
Through the chair to Representative McCabe, you pose an interesting question. What I think the key differential here is that by acknowledging these associations in statutes, they are able to collect a tax which goes to the state to pay for the management of the fisheries, specifically the management done by Department of Fish and Game. Right now, there's no way, other than with the dive fisheries assessments, for the state to pay for the surveys. And this is a way to, rather than pulling from the department's budget itself, it's paid for by the private industry. And you know, as long as they elect to do it to themselves.
I might be able to speak to that too.
So yeah, just a question maybe for the chair. Maybe we could get one of them as invited testimony at some point, either Kodiak or one of the more active ones. I know Kodiak's pretty active. They run Pillar Creek and I can't remember the name of the bay. It's not Katoy Bay, but they run the hatcheries in Kodiak through the Aquaculture Association. And if we're trying to put something in statute that is working well in the private sector, I think we're making a mistake. So,
yeah, let me have Representative Christ Tompkins, and I just received a note as well. So let me start with you.
Okay. I think I might be able to shed some clarity. Apples and oranges between regional aquaculture associations and these emerging test fisheries, or what would be called regional fisheries development associations. So it's a similar mechanism that you're thinking of, Representative McCabe, for regional aquaculture associations, the enhancement to pay for operations in part that fishermen pay. But this is actually for new and emerging fisheries that don't exist. It has nothing to do with salmon, has nothing to do with salmon enhancement. So shellfish in Southeast Alaska, pollock in Southeast Alaska, which is a fishery that doesn't yet exist, tanner crab in Prince William Sound. So it's the kind of the mechanism that exists for the regional aquaculture associations, but being applied to fisheries that don't yet exist, if that makes sense.
So we're going to have, sorry,
go ahead, go ahead.
So we're going to have two or three or four, how many different associations are we going to have in each region? To cover, are we going to have one for, so you said emerging fish, maybe there's an emerging, mariculture association. I mean, how many associations is the state going to manage in each region? We already have a private one. Why can't they step up? Why can't we encourage them to step up, or maybe even somehow throw a little bit of money at them and have them handle the region, the emerging fisheries in that region? I know that Kodiak's focused on salmon, and I get that, but why couldn't they do something a little bit bigger? I mean, we seem to be reinventing the wheel and putting it in statute, and I'm not sure that I like that too much.
Thank you. I appreciate those comments. And I don't know, Representative Chris Tompkins, do you have a response?
I would love to. I think the answer to your question is that the Regional Aquaculture Associations probably have no interest in managing non-salmon-related fisheries. We could ask them, but I'm fairly certain that would be their response. What this would create is basically just replicating what works so successfully with SARDFA in Southeast, which is like a bunch of fishermen basically say, here's a new stock and biomass. We think there's a prosecutable fishery. We're willing to tax ourselves to pay for the management and the science of it. Like, ADF&G give us the ability to basically, like, pay our own way. If the regional aquaculture associations were interested in administering that process, I think that could make sense. But I would be shocked if they said, I think they would just say, like, that's mission creep. We don't want, you know, anything to do with, like, Tanner crab or pollock in Southeast or anything like that.
Thanks.
And through the chair, I think I could probably also elaborate on that just a little bit. At least with, you know, I can't speak to how many groups would be interested in it. It's not the intent of the sponsor to limit those groups out of this. However, one thing we're seeing, at least with SARDFA, is that SARDFA has multiple subcommittees within it that manage their different fisheries. So it could be there's one general association that manages, you know, Prince William Sound. It could be octopus, it could be sea urchins, it could be Tanner crab, etc., all under one association. They just have different committees within that do that.
Thank you. And we do have great invited testimony, it looks like, and perhaps, you know, people who can speak to that point a little bit more directly as well. Were there any other questions or comments for the sponsor? Yes, Representative Vance.
Yes, thank you. I have just kind of overarching technical questions. So on our fiscal note, it talks about the bill. This is adding a sixth program to the Department of Revenue Tax Division roster of seafood assessment, and that it's similar to the other five programs. Just getting clarification, you mentioned that this was out of the need to go after to look at the Tanner crab. Are there other potential fisheries besides the Tanner crab that people have shown an interest in?
Yes, through the chair, yes, to speak to Representative Vance. We also know about the possibility of Prince William Sound sea urchins, and I believe octopus and I believe skate are all different topics of conversation. And that's just from talking to our constituents. I couldn't speak for other regions, but I would not be surprised in the least to learn there are several others as well.
Follow up?
Mm-hmm.
So this is only available to dive fisheries, this mechanism now, and by creating this sixth program, it can be for the crab, the sea urchins, or the skate. We don't have to have successive, or is it like, does this bill provide the mechanism for those different fisheries, or is it one per fishery?
Through the chair, let me see if I'm getting this right and if I can answer it. So, oddly enough, when it was created back in the 90s for the dive fishery, that was a very limited group, and it only applied to people doing diving. But it applied for, you know, all the different, they could do gooey ducks under that, they could do sea urchins under that, they could do sea cucumbers under that, all under that one type, the dive fishery management associations. However, with this, I shouldn't say however, this would open it up, but it wouldn't create several different groups. It would just expand the same capacities to essentially the commercial fishermen. I think when the Department of Revenue talks about its six types, it's not referring to dive fishery management versus commercial fishery, developing fishery management. I think that's referring to the landing tax, the business tax, and perhaps the Department of Revenue could speak more to that as well.
And we do have Nicole Reynolds, the Deputy Director from the Tax Division. Representative Vance, would you like to ask her that question?
If she wants to speak to it, just so that we have an overarching understanding of the changes of this, and then I did have another a different question for.
Ms. Reynolds, are you available, and did you hear the question?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning, through the chair. My name is Nicole Reynolds. I'm from the Department of Revenue Tax Division. And thank you for that question. The Department of Revenue administers several different fisheries-related taxes and assessments. We've got the fisheries business tax, the fisheries resource landing tax, the seafood marketing assessment, the salmon enhancement tax, seafood development tax, and the dive fishery management tax. I may have missed one in there, but there are several different tax types and assessments that we administer, and so that's what the reference in the fiscal note was.
Thank you, Ms. Reynolds, and I hope you'll stay online in case another question comes up. Representative Vance. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I was looking at the supporting documents, and there's some questions from the Southeast Alaska Fishermen's Alliance that I think are relevant to just making sure that everyone understands the process. They had a couple bullet points, and was kind of talking about what comes first, the chicken or the egg, and saying that the Fish and Game won't open a new fishery until there's some science regarding the resource. And they're saying under this legislation that there wouldn't yet be funds for the science for them to do that. And so they're asking, how do you foresee that mechanism taking place so that the fishery, say, for instance, the Tana crabs, can get started? And then their next question is, how do you determine who the participants in the fishery are to conduct the election for the assessments when there's no fishery yet? So I think this is something that, you know, we need to kind of work out. And I would love to hear, you know, your thoughts on this to be able to answer a lot of the questions from the public right now.
Sure. Through the chair to Representative Vance. Starting with the first question about, you know, putting the horse before the cart, so to speak, or the chicken before the egg in this case. I actually spoke at the Department of Fish and Game yesterday and had an interesting conversation about just this. And yes, is mostly the case. Science comes before opening a fishery. Science from the state comes before opening the fishery. However, there are times where it was a previous fishery that was already open. That data has existed and it's closed, and they would like to reopen it with the data that already exists. Another option is, you know, they look at NOAA's data, they're looking at federal data, and are able to say, okay, we know we have the resource there, the biomass exists. Given that evidence, we could potentially open a fishery now without doing further studies, and that would allow that. That being said, this within our office, we have talked about this a bunch, and it's not our intent to, we are amenable to changing it, so it's not necessarily new fisheries that don't exist yet, but it's currently existing developing fisheries, so that we're not trying to get a group going that doesn't have any funding to do studies that don't exist yet. So that's something we are willing to work with the members on and discuss in further. And then for your second question, this one, I also chatted with CFEC and Department of Fish and Game, and neither flagged this as a real issue, but I think perhaps if maybe Forrest Bowers could speak a little bit more to this one. This one is complex, and I think he would do it more justice than I do. So,
okay. Representative Vance, do you want to ask? Because we do have Forrest Bowers, the Division Operations Manager for Commercial Fisheries, online for questions.
Yes, thank you. If they have access to the supporting document, the question is on there is, how do you determine who participates in the fishery, since it's a developing fishery, to conduct an election for the assessment when it is not developed yet?
Mr. Bowers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Forrest Bowers, Deputy Director, Alaska Department of Fish and Game Division of Commercial Fisheries. And there's a couple of questions that have come up that I could speak to. First, on the question regarding, you know, what comes first, the science or the fishery, you know, there are multiple data sources that we use when we consider opening a fishery. One is past fishery data itself. You know, we can look at catch rates and fishery performance if a fishery's been open in the past, and and then compare that to current catch rates and kind of get some information on relative abundance, how the fishery is doing now compared to what it was like, you know, last year, the year before, several years in the past. We can also look at, you know, other fisheries for the same species in other parts of the world. For example, we've recently developed a fishery in Southeast Alaska for hagfish, and we don't have a survey for hagfish, but we looked around at other hagfish fisheries on the West Coast, and we got an idea of what catch rates are like in fisheries that are considered sustainable. We looked at what gear types are appropriate, what fishing seasons are appropriate. And then we authorized a limited fishery for hagfish under a commissioner's permit and closely monitored that in season. And you know, we've been able to keep that fishery going now for 5 or 6 years. And so that's really the type of fishery that I envision when we talk about a new fishery. You know, the Prince William Sound Tanner Crab fishery is a fishery that was open for many years and then closed due to low abundance. We have an annual survey for that fishery. In fact, this year we have about 18 days of survey time beginning in June 1st planned, and we've got a Board of Fisheries harvest strategy in place. So that one is really more of an established fishery that's just been closed and recently reopened. We've been fishing there for the last 5 or 6 years under a commissioner's permit, and that's been going pretty well. With regard to the question about how you identify a prospective pool of fishermen who would vote to form these associations, you know, the CFPC permit, the interim use or limited entry permit, is obviously one identifier, but also you know, some of those permits allow a person to fish for multiple species in multiple parts of the state, and so I think that was maybe the part of the concern that was raised by the CIFA group and in their comment letter. And we would have to go in and look at other characteristics of the fishery. So have to look at the species and area where the harvest was occurring. We couldn't just use the CFPC permit as an identifier. We'd have to look at other fishery characteristics to identify the potential pool of fishermen who could vote to authorize and form one of these associations. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Any follow-up? Okay, great. I know Representative McCabe had a question, but did you have a question as a follow-up to that?
No.
Okay, well, let's go to Representative McCabe.
So I'm just curious, are there, I don't even who to ask, but are there many hagfish fishermen waiting in the wings to form a association?
Well, let's see what Mr. Bowers can tell us about that.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Again, this is Forrest Bowers with the Department of Fish and Game. So the hagfish fishery is small. There's only a couple of fishermen participating, and I don't know if they're aware of this bill. But they would certainly be eligible to form an association if they so choose, if this bill becomes law. But they haven't approached us regarding any of the concepts that are in this bill.
Thank you.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The 75% voting threshold in the bill, is that the same as the voting threshold for SARDFA to make changes to the dye fishery?
Through the chair, Representative Tompkins, that's correct. Christ Tompkins, that's correct.
Thank you. And one follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
I know there have been a couple of statutory changes to the way the Southeast Dye Fishery Program functions statutorily in the last 9 years that I've been here. I can't quite remember what those bills are. I think Rep. Ortez carried a couple of them. They're total housekeeping things. And I maybe just as more of a flag or request to see if the changes that the legislature had to make, which were, I think, kind of a pain in the neck for everybody, especially the dive fishermen, if those changes are incorporated in this version, or perhaps you know offhand.
Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, I don't know those cleanup pieces of legislation off the top of my head. However, I have had some conversations with Phil Doherty over at SARDFA, and he has walked me through this bill and said, you know, based on our experiences, here's some areas that we have experienced a little pushback, and, you know, might I recommend these changes? And I think that we are amenable to walking that through and working with them even to do a little bit of cleanup based on those. Notably, he mentioned that for them, they've had 75% of their voters have to have a majority of, 75% is at their board for the petition, but it's a majority of voters have to approve. And what they've noted is it's actually quite difficult to get a substantial portion of their fishermen to vote in these elections, so that, you know, a suggested change would be actually a majority of ballots returned. And I've looked at this and actually thought, you know, that I think that completely makes sense. I'm not entirely sure that the bill doesn't already cover for that. I'll flip through here in a minute and note that section, but I think we are very amenable to working with SARDFA and other groups to make sure that these are clean and brought up to current standards and meet, you know, in the 21st century and work for everybody. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, thank you. It'd be great just to sort of confirm that as you have further conversations, but that's very helpful.
Do you want to ask Mr. Bowers if he has anything to add on that?
Yeah. If available, would I suspect he might have some offhand knowledge.
Yes, Mr. Bowers, did you hear that question?
Madam Chair, I did not. Could the question be repeated, please?
Sure.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and through the chair, Mr. Bowers. If you happen to be familiar with some of the cleanup bills that have gone through the legislature over the last 6-8 years relating to the dive fisheries, and my recollection is we were sort of fixing little sort of administrative headaches that were enshrined in statute and therefore only to be solved via statutory change. And if you happen to recall what those issues are, because I don't in this moment, that maybe the committee should be aware of as we think about this bill.
You know, unfortunately, I don't, through the chair, this is Forrest Bowers again. Unfortunately, I don't have a recollection of those right off the top of my head. We could probably put those together later, but I don't have them right in front of me here now.
All good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. And it sounds like Ms. Perman will be working on that, and perhaps she can follow up with you and then help out with that. If there aren't any other questions for Ms. Perman at this time, we could go to the invited testimony. And we do have Phil Doherty, and I apologize if I've said that incorrectly, from the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association. And then we also have Makena O'Toole, and I think that's the constituent that you worked with on this. So I don't know if you have a preference in order, but Mr. Doherty, on the question that was just asked, might have a little bit to add on that. So I just wanted to mention that. Ms. Perman, do you have a preference?
I do not.
Okay, why don't we start with you, Mr. Doherty? And if you heard the question that was previously asked by Representative Chris Tompkins and have anything to add, could you also work that into your comments, please?
Sure. Good morning. I'll ask first off, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll go to Representative Chris Tompkins' question first, and then I'll give you my little spiel. The change that we made 2 years ago through Representative Ortiz's office was to change the voting criteria to change the assessment on our fisheries. In particular, the secret cumber fishery wanted to lower the assessment tax from 5% down to 3% and then eventually 1%. And the way the voting structure was set up legislatively was that the majority of permit holders had to vote in the positive. Now, it seems easy to think that the majority of permit holders are going to vote in the positive to lower their tax. The problem is there were so many interim use permits in this fishery, and so many divers over the course of the years had dropped out of the fisheries that they lost interest and didn't vote. And if we did not receive a ballot by a permit holder, it was considered a no vote. So it was just difficult to get enough permit holders to vote, if you can believe that. So 2 years ago, Representative Ortiz's office, we got that changed in our regulation to say the majority of ballots received after an assessment tax vote. And I believe, I know I talked to Ms. Perman about that the other day, and I'm not sure if it's in this bill right now, 64, but I would suggest that that's the way it is. Of course, in the dive fisheries, just to expand a little bit, we're talking about 350 to 400 permit holders. So it's a lot harder to get some of those latent permit holders up and about and to do the thing versus if you just have a brand new fishery with half a dozen fishermen involved. So does that answer that question?
Representative Christ Tompkins?
It does. Thank you. That's very helpful.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Darty. And then we're ready for your prepared remarks.
Okay. To introduce myself, as I should have probably at the very beginning there, my name is Phil Darty from Ketchikan, Alaska. I'm the executive director of the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association. I've been involved in the association for 16 years now. And then prior to that, I was the area management biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game out of Ketchikan for the better part of 25 years. So I'm pretty familiar with the dive fisheries, how this our association got set up, and obviously in the last 16 years, I'm pretty familiar with the inner workings of some of this stuff. And again, I should say here, my association right now is not supporting, nor is it not supporting. We haven't had a discussion or a vote of this at our board of fisheries, at our board level. So I just want to make sure that I'm here trying to maybe shed some light on how SARFTA is set up in regards to 64. 64 is set up a lot along the lines of what our association has set up. It's they've obviously taken a bunch of our sections and added it into here. So SARFTA was set up in 1998 as a private nonprofit through the legislative body, Alaska Statute 43.76. And the reason we were set up is that in the mid to late 80s, the dive fisheries started to draw a lot of attention. We had some valuable resources up here, sea cucumbers, gooey duck clams, and sea urchins. And as the department, and again, I was there at the time, so I speak kind of firsthand experience, we realized that, you know, these may not be sustainable harvests, so we kind of put the brakes on it. We worked through CFEC and the legislature and imposed a moratorium on the fisheries by 1995. That moratorium was in place by, through 2001. In the meantime, through 1999. In the meantime, the divers who were interested in forming this association got together during the time of the moratorium. They put together an interim board, a working board. They didn't have any money. They were just doing this because they knew there was a resource out there. The department had told them that they didn't have the fiscal wherewithal to continue these fisheries, and they needed money from an outside source, and that was the dive fishery. So that's how things started. The fisheries got started again in the early 2000s. CFEC had, as there was some discussion earlier, CFEC had come up with a criteria for limiting the fishery. So you then had a limited entry fishery, and it was under the regulations of a regional dive fisheries. The fishermen voted to tax themselves. We have three, as I said, we have three different species, urchins, cucumbers, and gooey duck clams. Each species is taxed at a different rate depending on how much money we need to pay the Fish and Game Department to do their assessment and management. And that rate is voted on by the divers. So that's how our association is set up. Of course, a little bit more than that, but it's House Bill 64 is set up a lot like the Dive Association. So I'll leave it at that for now, Madam Chair, and answer any questions if I can.
Thank you. We really appreciate your testimony. And we do have a question from Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just looking at the bill text as Mr. Doherty was testifying. And the fix that was referred to is embodied in this legislation. It's a majority of ballots returned. So that's great. And the question I have for Mr. Doherty is if he can enlighten slash refresh the committee on when the dive fisheries in Southeast were initially created, I think it was in the 90s or whenever, where the initial resources for doing the abundance research and surveys and science came from. How was that resourced or funded?
Through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins. Hopefully I won't get too long-winded here. The fisheries that drew the most attention at the very beginning, and this was in the mid-1980s, was sea urchins. And it was through a company from California that did a lot of sea urchin work down in California, and they had heard that there was sea urchin resources up here. So they worked with the Fish and Game Department. They came up with a plan for a test fishery, and through that test fishery, the department would be able to look at some of the sizes and maybe some density information and draw some monies from that test fishery. So, and then when the test fishery was ongoing, the divers, and at the time they were mostly from California, saw that there was a lot of sea cucumbers up here, and they saw there was a lot of gooey duck clams up here. And so when the test fisheries for urchins got done, and we were actually going to have a test fishery right in front of Sitka, and then we got the test bid out there, and by the time everything got squared away and the divers got in the water, the sea otters had eaten all of our test fishery urchins, but that's a different story. So anyway, so these fisheries got started. They were started at low levels. A half a dozen divers were coming up here and harvesting cucumbers and gooey duck clams and at a very low levels, and at such a level that it really didn't raise any red flags for the Fish and Game Department. But as we got more divers up here and as the harvest increased, the red flags did go up, and we didn't want to make the same mistake with these three species, urchins, cukes, and gooey ducks, as we made with abalone. And so we put the brakes to the fishery, and that's how we started from. And from how did we get our knowledge of how to manage the fisheries and how to do the assessment activities during those years? These fisheries had been ongoing in British Columbia, well-defined, well-researched, well-managed in British Columbia, California, and Washington State. So we met with those gentlemen, those biologists, and we looked at their program, and we set our program up much like a well-established program from those three different entities. And so when we first started, just put a number on this, these fisheries were worth hundreds of thousands of dollars to the early fishermen. In the last few years, these three dive fisheries, the ex-vessel value just to the fishermen is more in the line to $12 to $15 million. So I would call it a very successful program over the last 25 years. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Christ Tompkins has a follow-up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and appreciate that answer, Mr. Doherty. I think basically the idea was that there was the test fishery initially, and that sort of provided some of the initial data, but I don't know if maybe the department could just sort of speak to, in a future hearing potentially, how that like chicken and egg relationship worked. That could be helpful. My other question is, and I just can't remember offhand, do the dive fisheries and dive fishermen pay the raw fish tax to the state of Alaska?
If that's a question for me, Madam Chair, I'll answer that.
Yes.
So, for example, in the gooey duck clam fishery, the fishermen charge themselves 7%. The ex-vessel value, that's the SARFTA tax or the fisheries tax. And then you add the 3% on top of that. So basically in the gooey duck clam fishery, the fishermen are taxed at 10%. you know, before they get out of the water. So, yes, the 3% is paid by our fisheries.
Thank you. And I guess kind of a question or kind of a comment. Thanks for confirming that basically that fishery is basically double taxed. And unlike every other fishery in Alaska, they basically pay the raw fish tax, which goes to, you know, the general fund and maybe ultimately the department, depending on how you look at it. And then they pay on top of that the direct costs of managing their own fishery. And it's just kind of, it's something, I don't have a solution, but maybe something for us to think about, that it's basically any new fishery that's created through this process is just kind of like they're get stuck with basically paying double for no particular reason other than they just happen to come into existence later on, which kind of feels arbitrary to me. And again, I don't know how to quite reconcile that. It seems like it would be great if there's a way that these new fisheries, once established and are paying their own way through contributing through the raw fish tax, can transition, you know, out of that structure somehow, and the department sort of absorbs that responsibility. But this is complicated, just flagging the point, and appreciate the information.
Thank you. And I just want to make sure Mr. Daugherty didn't have a response or anything he wanted to say to that.
Well, Madam Chair, I bite my tongue a little bit, but we completely agree with Representative Christ Tompkins, is that we've been paying, we're the only fisheries in the state of Alaska that pays its own way. And not only do we pay the Fish and Game Department money, we pay the Department of Environmental Conservation, and we collect all of the PSP. But yes, I agree. You know, I think it's time for the state to take a look at our fisheries and say, hey, you're a well-established fishery. You're the only fishery in the state that the state doesn't pay for, and perhaps correct that mistake. Thank you, Manager.
Thank you. And I just wanted to give you the opportunity to respond to that. We do have Representative Ortiz, who joined us at 10:30. If we could please have that reflected in the record. We have a question from Representative McCabe. And I don't know, Ms. Perman, I saw you put your hand sort of up as if you had a comment. Was it related to Representative Christ Tompkins?
I had two comments related to Representative Christ Tompkins. First, as far as the SARDFA goes, I think you were asking about the chicken or the egg, and it is my understanding that they had an infusion of federal dollars at the very beginning to get going as well. And then, you know what, and I will sit back for a minute.
And the second point. Okay, Representative McCabe.
So this discussion, especially SARFDA, brought to light a memory. I was actually involved in the very infancy of the sea urchin fishery in Kodiak, just before it collapsed the first time, when the emperor in Japan died and they quit eating sea urchins for a year. So that was before there was any regulation, I don't think, and we were transporting sea urchins. I was the transport. But my question is, if there were a new dive fish, emerging dive fish, say we wanted to dive for starfish or seahorses or something like that, would it fall under SARFDA? Or would we create an entirely new entity just for this emerging fishery? In other words, we have the Longliners Association, we have the Draggers Association, we have the Trollfish Association. There are a bazillion associations in Alaska, and I just worry that we are creating an association in search of a fishery. And I think that creating regulations before there's a need for them is not appropriate for this body. So I guess my question to Mr. Daugherty is what I said earlier. If there were a new dive sort of fishery that emerged, such as starfish, say that some Asian market decided they loved Alaska starfish, and would it fall under SARFDA, or would we create a new fishery management sort of association for it?
Through the chair, if the initial legislation didn't create SARFDA, it created dive fisheries associations, and under that regulation, SARFDA became a viable entity using the regulations that were in place, but they were kind of generic regulations and SARFDA fit in underneath that. Now, if you say if there was a dive fisheries for Sunstar started here in Southeast Alaska, if it's a dive fisheries, it would fall under the purview of SARFTA. But if it was started in Prince William Sound, let's say, they would have to carve out their own association. The regulation is set up by regions within the state, Southeast, Prince William Sound, Cook Inlet, Kodiak. So if any dive fisheries starts in those areas, they would use the generic legislation and then fill in the blanks like SARFTA did, and it would be for that particular geographical area, which I believe is defined in the enabling legislation, but I would have to double check that, Madam Chair.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Dorr? Oh, Ms. Perman.
No, I'll come back. It's a comment back to earlier, and then it has recurred to me now.
Okay. Okay, so if we don't have any other questions for Mr. Doherty, thank you so much for joining us, and maybe if you can stay on the line in case anything else comes up. We'll go to Makina O'Toole, and Ms. Perman, if you want to make that comment right now, that would be fine before we start the other testimony.
Madam Chair, yes, I would appreciate that very much. Back to Representative Chris Tompkins' question and comment about transitioning about these developing fishery associations sustaining a higher level of tax than our current established fisheries. We also acknowledge that as the bill sponsor, and it is not our intent that as they scale up into an established fishery, they continue to pay their way. We don't want to create a situation where the current established fisheries are grandfathered in, and from now on we set the precedence that everybody pays for themselves. We want to create a system where they scale out of it. We don't want them to instantly become established fisheries and then that funding goes away entirely, because we don't want to find it where they've had funding and it drops off to zero suddenly, but we want to find a way to scale away from that over time so then it becomes the Department of Fish and Game's purview to manage.
Thank you. That's great. I think it makes a lot of sense. Is there any idea what we could establish to create that sort of transition process?
Through the chair, that's something we are still certainly discussing, and we'd be happy to work with your office if you have ideas as well to bounce around. So.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll probably take you up on that. It'd be great to get the department's perspective. Makes a lot of sense.
Okay, wonderful. That brings us to Makina O'Toole.
Hello. You guys got me?
Yes, we do. Please go ahead. If you'd state your name and affiliation for the record, we'd love to hear from you.
All right. Hello, my name is McKenna O'Toole. I am the current Shellfish Division Chair of Cordova District Fishermen United, and I have been a member of SARFTA since 2010. I'd like to start by thanking the Fisheries Committee for making time for testimony on this bill. I'd also like to thank Louise Stutz and Matt Green and Sam Raybung for all their work on this. Watching them take a rough idea and shape it into this bill before us, I think, is a great example of the legislative process at work. I'm a lifelong fisherman and lifelong Cordova resident. The idea for this bill came about after years of attempting to open new fishing opportunities for unutilized species in Prince William Sound. It was frustrating that we could go 30 years without doing a real comprehensive survey for tanner crab, or go 15 years with no survey at all for golden king crab, and are currently going on decades since our last Dungeness survey. We tried going through all the proper channels of Board of Fish, but we were always met with the same response from ADF&G. We don't have funding to manage experimental fisheries. And it's true, in recent years, ADF&G's budget has received major cuts. Critical management projects for established fisheries are being cut due to lack of funding. I submitted proposals for some of these developing fisheries under commissioner's permits and asked to be assessed at 5% to cover management costs, only to find out under current statutes this is legally not an option. The only solution that ADF&G was able to come up with is to conduct test fisheries. This is where ADF&G sells the rights of a public resource to the highest bidder to generate revenue for the department. This system is very susceptible to abuse and rides a dangerous line of producing a culture of sharecropper fishermen working for the state. It also provides a very limited and unreliable data set for stock assessments. HB 64 provides an alternative to this system. It's modeled after the SARDFA system. In all my years of fishing around Alaska and the West Coast, this seems to be the healthiest example of industry and management working hand-in-hand with a common goal. This bill will enable fishermen to form regional development associations, much like SARDFA, to assess themselves on developing fisheries and have the money go directly back into developing the development and management of that specific fishery, not just disappear into the general fund. It'll allow ADF&G to have the budget and the flexibility to manage these small-scale fisheries to determine if there's a larger potential. This bill will not only help fisheries for new species that have never been commercially harvested in certain areas, but will give ADF&G the tools to resurrect once thriving fisheries that have been long defunct. Some of the species that this could open opportunity for just in Prince William Sound are tanner crab, golden, red, and blue king crab, sea urchins, whelks, dungeness crabs, skate, sea cucumbers, spiny dogfish, Pacific octopus, black rockfish, and grouped tanner crab. I might add here that squid in Southeast is another potential, and all species of crab in Yakutat in Area D could majorly benefit from this. In this time of statewide budget shortages, the state has put a very heavy emphasis on developing mariculture to boost our struggling economy. While I fully support this, I think we should put an equal amount of energy into fully utilizing the fishery resources that we already have. HB 64 gives us tools to do that and make Alaska's fishery stronger than ever. So that's kind of what I had prepared. I'm sorry if some of that was repetitive. A couple of things I wanted to just touch on here that have come up is I hear test fisheries coming up a lot today, and I know that they have their time and their place, but for our tanner crab, for instance, the department has put a proposal in for this next board cycle that's going to structure the management of the tanner crab fishery in Prince William Sound. All of the funding is going to be dependent on executing yearly test fisheries where they sell the rights of the fishery to a select few lowest bidders. And that hasn't worked very well in the past. People take the contracts and then they realize they bid too much for the right to go fish and they don't complete their survey or their fishery, leaving us with no data to assess the stocks and no funding to manage the fishery. I think that doing an assessment from the entire fishing fleet that's participating in these developing fisheries is a much more stable way to move forward toward management. And as far as too many fishing organizations, I understand that could be a concern. And if there was any other route to go through an existing organization or existing statutes, we definitely would have tried that. Anyway, I guess if anyone has any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. O'Toole. Really appreciate your testimony. And I think, is your first name pronounced McKenna?
Yeah.
Okay, pardon me for mispronouncing it. Thank you for your testimony today. Do we have any questions for our testifier? Representative Ortiz, you're online. Do you have any questions?
No, Madam Chair, just happy to be here and listen in. Thank you.
Okay. And so, Mr. O'Toole, it sounds like you have, you know, extensive experience with this process, and that was very helpful for me to understand. And so, you know, if we were able to pass this bill, could you see it being pretty quickly put to use?
I think so, yeah. I think, you know, we've actually had a Fisheries Development Association that meets every week or so for the last 3 years. Unfortunately, it's just an organization in title alone. There's not really anything that can come from it other than generating ideas. And the idea for this bill was heavily tossed around in that organization. And I think that we could make it a formal thing pretty quickly and start contributing toward, you know, tanner crab specifically, but also move toward opening skates and rockfish and, you know, some of these other underutilized fisheries around here.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's helpful for me. I'm not seeing any questions at this time, and so thank you so much to our invited testimony. And before I go to the public testimony, I just want to announce one more time for members. We have Forrest Bowers, from commercial fisheries. We have Alpheus from Legislative Legal. We've heard from Nicole, the Deputy Director of Tax Division. So they're still all online if anybody has any questions. Okay, then let's go to the public testimony. We have one person online, Chelsea Hazen. And apologies if I've mispronounced that, the Executive Director of Cordova District Fishermen United.
Yes, hello, Madam Chair and the House Fisheries Committee. For the record, my name is Chelsea Hazeman, and I am the Executive Director of Cordova District Fishermen United. I've been working closely with McKenna, and I'm speaking on behalf of CDFU's Shellfish Division in support of House Bill 64, Fishery Development Association. One of the primary challenges our Prince William Sound fleet has faced in recent years is the lack of options for diversification in our region's fisheries, particularly for younger fishermen who face significant expenses and high permit prices. We are a heavily salmon-dependent region, with some fishermen engaging in halibut and ground fish fisheries. As part of the younger generation of commercial fishermen in the region, we grew up hearing the stories of the heyday of fishing in Prince William Sound, crab, clams, herring, but also in the wake of significant environmental, social, and economic trauma, and we did not experience these fisheries in the same way as our parents and grandparents. After 30 years with many fisheries being closed, we are seeing many anecdotal reports of a wide variety of underutilized species, both the formerly fished and entirely new fisheries, tanner crab, king crab, sea cucumber, skate, as examples, species that could be fished in small-scale, small-boat fisheries to provide food, jobs, and expand economic impact in our coastal communities. We've worked hard in recent years to establish relationships with Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologists and voiced our concerns, questions, and ideas. We've taken these to Board of Fish. We do feel like we've made progress in the last few years to get some of these underutilized resources open through commissioner's permits, and there is so much more potential to continue this work into the future. Unfortunately, funding has continued to be an issue for adequate management, and without a funding mechanism in place, we lack the surveys necessary to assess biomass to open many fisheries in the first place. The ADF&G budget is stretched to the limit as it is with existing fisheries, leaving little opportunity to assess or open new fisheries and expand our coastal economy. So this idea started with challenges seen in our own region. We believe it can provide frameworks that will benefit the entire state and provide opportunity for fishermen in all regions to engage with management and ensure that we are sustainably utilizing Alaska's resources for the benefit of Alaskans. Thank you for your time and consideration of these comments.
Thank you so much. I appreciate hearing that. And we do talk about the graying of the fleet and the need to get right the next generation of fisherwomen, fishermen out there. So appreciate your testimony. Any questions for the testifier? Okay, not seeing any. Thank you for joining us today. And let me just check in one more time for questions, because that will bring us back to discussion on the bill. Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. Through the chair, you talked about Ms. Perlman. And I'm not sure I got your last name right.
Through the chair, you did great. It's Perman, but that's totally okay.
Thank you. Sorry about that. You had talked about how the dive fishery group started with federal funds. Could you elaborate more on that, please?
Through the chair, that is knowledge I've learned secondhand from Mr. Doherty, and I only know what I've been told, so he's actually probably the best person to elaborate slightly further.
Okay, let's see. And pardon me, I need to close public testimony. I skipped that. Mr. Doherty, are you still on the line?
Okay, my line just got unmuted, so yes, I'm still here.
Okay, Representative Story had a question for you.
Okay, could you just real quick repeat it, please?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Doherty, for being here today. My question was... it had been said that federal funds started to help out the dive association, and I was wondering if you could elaborate on that, how that came to be.
Yeah, Madam Chair, yes, I can. Back in the, when we were transitioning from an open fishery that wasn't being assessed to the moratorium, we... And when I say we, both the state and the divers started looking for at least enough funding to get this thing started. One of those sources of fundings was federal monies through Senator Stevens' office. It was called Nearshore Funds. And I don't have the exact amount of money in in front of me right now. I could get that if you needed it somewhere down the road. But it was enough to get things started. It was enough to get the Fish and Game Department up and running to start assessment work. And there were also a couple of other sources of funds. The state did throw in some funds, you know, because of their personnel, and they were using their big dive research vessel here in Southeast Alaska. So the state did cover some of those early costs. The municipalities in Southeast Alaska, as the divers and businesses went to the municipalities, they kicked in money. They knew that here in Ketchikan, and I believe Sitka and Petersburg, again, I don't have the amount of money in front of me right now, but they realized that this was an opportunity to expand fisheries, so the municipalities loosened up their pocketbooks a little bit. And then we got actually some funding from the different companies that wanted to get into the dive fisheries. So we started at least with a little bit of a pool of money from three or four different resources. Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, really appreciate that. I think that, unless Ms. Perman, do you have any comments you'd like to make now?
Through the chair, none. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. We're going to hold this bill over, and we'll let members know what the amendment deadline will be. It sounds like there's maybe some things that people want to work on, and so hopefully we'll be able to give time necessary for that. Our next committee meeting is going to be on Tuesday, April 6th at 10 a.m. The schedule will be announced later today. I did want to just make a comment to members that we're working through the bills that have been referred to us now that we're done with the budget, and it's possible that we'll have a little bit of extra time for topics of consideration. So if people have ideas for that, please let us know so we can try to schedule things that you're interested in hearing about and people you're interested in hearing from. I just also wanted to let folks know we have a joint hearing with the House Resources Committee. This is on Saturday, April 10th. And our staff did poll all the members, so it had been reported back that would work for everyone. We know that's unusual, but this is for the purpose of holding the confirmation hearings. And we expect there to be several hours of testimony. And so in order to sort of make that work, the Saturday at 1 p.m. was the best option. And then it also includes the Fisherman's Fund, Advisory and Appeals Council, and then the CFEC. So I think in total that day there'll be the five Board of Fisheries, there's one CFEC, and one from the Fisherman's, two from the Fisherman's Fund. So a few of those probably may be less interest, who knows, but certainly expect a lot of interest out of the Board of Fisheries nominees. So hopefully that works with everyone. We'll be in Davis 106, and so that way we have a lot of room to spread out, but of course people are welcome to join remotely if they're more comfortable. Is there anything else? Representative Christ Tompkins.
Will popcorn be provided?
We could probably arrange for that. Keep it fun, right? Okay. If there's nothing else to come before us today, we will go ahead and adjourn. It's 11:13 a.m., and hopefully everyone has a really nice Easter weekend. Thank you.